I come in the power of light. I come in the light of wisdom. I come in the mercy of light. The light hath healing in its wings.
Welcome to the Golden Dawn Podcast. Join us now as we enter the pathway of light.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are at. Thank you for tuning in to the Golden Dawn Podcast this afternoon. My name is Robert Zenk, your host, and we hope to have an excellent show for you today. This is part two of the show that we began last week. So if you are downloading this show on iTunes, you might want to get part one and listen to it first. The definition of the show is you're a spiritual, magical person. You have a strong desire to open yourself up to a higher level of spirituality, higher energies and forces, including angels and light. When you open yourself up to these higher forces, and you don't have to be a member of the Golden Dawn by any means to do that, not at all. As a matter of fact, people open themselves up to higher forces of light all the time, and they don't have the protection that the Golden Dawn provides them. So as you open up, you're going to naturally find counter forces. Some of them are very negative. Some of them are just uncooperative. Some of them are more sinister. But these forces oftentimes will try to hinder you from doing what you're called to do, from being the person that you're called to be, from having and developing the spiritual connection that you're called to develop. And so I want to welcome all of you today as we continue on this discussion about the nature of negative forces within the sphere of sensation. And we're going to talk about how to remove some of these negative forces as well. I want to remind you, if you're interested in information on the Golden Dawn, you can visit our website, www.esotericgoldendawn.com. That's esotericgoldendawn.com. There's all the information you need on that website. We'll mention a few other websites as the show progresses. We have some guests on the show today, so let's bring them on, and we will talk with them and get their input. We have from the Windy City of Chicago, V.H. Fretter, A.A. from Temple of Ptah. How are you today?
Good. Good evening. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And do you have a lot of wind out there now?
It's windy and about 40 degrees.
Okay.
Perfect Chicago weather.
Have you ever dealt with a negative force that you could not control?
Well, that's a difficult question. It's kind of a loaded question because at the time that I was dealing with the negative force, I believed that I could not control it. I was unaware of where it drew its power and its energy and its consciousness, its conscious force from. So I'd have to say the answer would be no overall. I've never experienced a negative force that I could not overcome. being that those forces are attracted to those lesser qualities and those personality and emotional states and draw energy from them. And you know, once realizing where they're drawing their energy from, ultimately from your own sphere of sensation, they're very easy to gain control over and remove. What do you think?
Well, you know, I was asked, and the reason I asked you this loaded question, I was asked before I went on the air, somebody asked me, they said, well, I'm curious, if I become a member of the Golden Dawn, am I more likely to deal with negative forces? And am I more likely to have to deal with those kind of energies? And the answer is, I think no. And the reason I give that opinion is this. I think that if a person is on the pathway of light and they're doing the work, whatever it may be, whatever their spiritual tradition is, they're going to be assaulted at times by negative and unwanted forces. That's just the nature of the opposing energy. But I think the Golden Dawn provides some phenomenal tools for dealing with these unwanted forces, so you're not spending, you know, days and months fasting trying to get rid of unwanted negative forces. You have ritualistic magical tools that will help you cleanse yourself, your sphere of sensation, and your environment at a much quicker level. Now, that's my thought. What's your thought on it?
Well, I agree with that. The problem is there's so many books out in the market, and they date back, you know, as far as you can think of this battle of good and evil, and the more good things you do, the more bad things you attract in your life. And humanity has developed a perception that the more that you work toward divinity, the more that you do good acts, the more opposition you're going to attract. And we understand from the law of attraction that that's not necessarily true. People get in a quandary over, they get in this positive thought mode and they think, oh, the more positive things I attract in my life, the more negative things I'm going to have to deal with. But I think it was in the book of Abramelin, which was translated by MacGregor Mathers, where it was said, to overcome and to rid yourself of any negative forces, any negative affliction, any negative entities in your life, you must work toward a good life and make yourself, as it were, a vessel to house the divine, which is actually the complete opposite of what a lot of people believe.
Yeah, I think that the law of attraction, if we study the writings of Hermes and so forth, I think you're right. When we're thinking good thoughts, we bring good things. On the other hand, I do think we tend to light up the astral plane, and we make ourselves sometimes more of a target, if that makes any sense. But let's bring on another guest and see what they have to say. We'll expand the discussion, and let's see who we have here. Who do we have on this line? Hello? Hello, who do we have here?
Hello, this is Frederick IC. Can you hear me?
Hello, Frederick. Yes, we can hear you. Nice to have
Excellent.
You with us.
Good evening. Good to be Good here. Evening. Thanks.
So we were talking about this idea of lighting up on the astral plane versus the concept and attracting negative forces versus the concept or the idea that is taught in the law of attraction, which basically says you're thinking good thoughts, you're doing good deeds, you're going to attract good things to you. Whereas
sure.
the concept of lighting yourself up on the astral plane says, well, I'm doing good thoughts, I'm thinking good deeds, or I'm doing good deeds, you know, I'm invoking a lot of light, but I'm lighting myself up on the astral plane, on the plane of demons, if you will, or negative forces, and therefore I'm attracting them because they need to feed. They need energy.
Sure. Well, you know, I think it's important to understand that there is a difference between attracting negative forces as a result of you yourself projecting out negativity and struggle and in a sympathetic manner, and the type of attraction that you're mentioning that comes from lighting yourself up on the astral. See, when you're doing the spiritual work of initiation in the Golden Dawn, and sometimes this, as we say, lights us up on the astral to attract unwanted forces, these forces are always present as part of our spiritual struggle. Sometimes we become aware of them so that we can overcome them for others or for ourselves, or sometimes they're there in order to move us forward in the work. But more than not, sometimes it seems that we just become more aware of them so that we can bring more good into the world.
So what I guess if I were to make an interpretation, ultimately, as it says in one of the Golden Dawn advanced initiations, it says that the evil helpeth forward the good.
Sure.
Okay, because in overcoming that evil, we become stronger toward our ultimate aim. If we're moving in the direction of goodness and light, we may attract some of these forces on the negative plane, to our sphere of sensation, but they don't necessarily enter our sphere of sensation. They provide an opportunity for us to literally catapult ourselves past them to a higher level, even beyond our imagination.
Right. And sometimes we can even bring light into the darkness that was previously that demonic presence.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
What do you think about that, AA?
Well, I was going to say, I think that's well quoted in one of the higher initiations in the Golden Dawn, where it says, correct me if I'm quoting this wrong, nature persuaded us that there are pure demons and that even the evil germs of matter may alike become useful and good. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that it can be misunderstood. I don't think it's necessarily that the evil is good. The evil is still evil, but you know, all things under heaven can seek to move us towards bringing more light into the world.
And in essence, those lesser forces can become a catapult or a driving force to forward you to overcome obstacles and achieve your ultimate goals.
Certainly.
Can you give some example of that so that our listeners listening to this podcast can have a better understanding of what we're talking about here?
Well, I would say let's take a mundane example of healing. If someone comes to you and is inflicted with an illness, now, this doesn't have to be a result of demonic attack, but let's just say for the sake of the show that it was the result of some sort of demonic attack that resulted in a physical ailment. Now, in this act of a person coming to you with a sickness, and you, through the art of initiation, through the skills that you have learned in healing, you have the capacity to rid this person of their suffering, then it would seem in this situation that just the very act of healing that illness and the self-sacrifice of giving that is required in that situation, you are bringing more light to the world than was there. And that light then contrasts against that darkness, which then makes the light seem even brighter than it would be had the darkness not been there, had that person not come to you with that illness. You know, a healer brings light into the world when they're healing the sick, not when they're just sitting in a chair, you know, merely holding on to their skills.
Was there anything you wanted to add to that, AA? Because that was a pretty good description.
That was a good description. You know, I wanted to maybe add, you know, since all energies essentially operate in a chain, and so if every living individual represents a link, some specific area of the chain, then affecting one link in the chain will affect the outcome of the whole process. So the entire self state of not only yourself, but the rest of humanity can be affected through those types of acts. Explaining.
Here's a question I have for you that has oftentimes been asked. Does the Golden Dawn, because it is not a religion, does it define evil?
I think that what we can see in the Golden Dawn is throughout the initiations, throughout the dramas, throughout the poetics, throughout the lessons, we come to learn evil through the artistic expression of something that is higher than a simple rational definition. Because it would seem that if we tried to write out a definition, you know, what is evil? Well, evil is, according to the dictionary, this meaning here. It's that what which isn't God, or it's that which prevents us from being in the light. It would seem that in every case of trying to define it in such a way, we would miss the mark. And so through the power of initiation, through the power of sacred theater and the Kabbalistic and magical lessons that are taught, we learn the lessons of good and evil. We learn the contrast of the evil against the light. And I believe that in that journey, we eventually come to truly understand what evil is by bearing witness to it and seeing it, you know, seeing the light reflect off of it, rather than just a rational understanding.
You know, one of the things that we run into from time to time, and we've seen this, and And sometimes when people think of negative energy or demons or any of that kind of thing, they're thinking of growling and ugliness and all of that kind of thing. But sometimes you see people very, very dedicated to the path, whatever path they're on. I've seen them on the Golden Dawn path. I've seen people on their own Buddha, their Buddhist path or a spiritual path that they're really devoted to. And then all of a sudden, it's like they're starting to wonder about this, they're not sure about that. And then somebody comes into their life that takes up a lot of their time. I want to talk a little bit about thought centers. Does somebody want to run with that with that piece of meat at all?
Because so, well, why don't you tell us first of all what a thought center is for everybody?
Well, I think a good definition of a thought center is better by example. In the book of Matthew, we have Jesus who goes up into the wilderness, and he's preparing for his life mission. He's preparing for the great work, okay? But he's being tempted by the devil. So this is a very clear definition of a thought center. Now, obviously, from an esoteric perspective, the devil is not standing there with him saying, here, look at, you know, what the devil is a part of his own inner dialogue that's taking place, the thoughts that are in his mind that are coming to him. Now, in the Kabbalah, we know that even evil needs light to live on. That's why it's attracted to light. Evil needs an energy source. There is nothing in the universe that can exist without light. And so, while light in an abundant form, is overwhelming to evil and will drive it away, a little bit of light in a small form, in an eyedropper form, if you will, is enough for that evil force to receive nourishment. And now some people say, well, you know, the evil forces, negative forces, they grow with fear. And perhaps they grow with that energy, that negative energy as well. But they do need light. So in the Kabbalah, the letter Kof is the only letter that extends below the line into the Klipot. And it's through that letter that, according to Kabbalistic tradition anyway, that the divine allows a little bit of light to reach the Klipot so that they too can survive and play a role in the great work, which is what? To divide, to tempt, to dissuade, to discourage. Can we think of more? I'm sure we can. We just don't want to bring our audience down too much. So these particular negative energies or forces, whether they're part of our own personality, whether they are separate energies that exist on another plane, it's really not important from a practical perspective. They're aspects that come in through the back of the mind. They come in through the area where Kof is located on the brain. Now, what is the back of the mind? Well, it's the subconscious. It's the area where we keep all of our hidden limitations, our fears, our doubts, our worries, our pains. It's where we stuff everything. It's like the old attic where everything goes up, you know, all the bad memories, all the pictures, everything goes up into the subconscious, good, bad, and ugly. And so they pick apart, they look for doorways in that subconscious mind. And when they find a doorway where they think they have an opening, they begin to talk. And that talking comes across as your own thoughts, as your own inner debate, as your own dialogue. It comes across in the form of doubt, fear, despair, and all of these other kinds of lower vibrational negative thoughts that keep people from maximizing their potential, from seeking the summum bonum, for becoming the stone of the wise, from doing the great work. Okay, that's my definition. You go from there.
Well, I'll jump right in. Based on your definition, those forces, that force, would you say that's an outside force coming in, or it's a force within yourself?
You know, I said it really didn't matter.
Okay.
I mean, from a practical perspective, it honestly doesn't matter, does it?
It honestly does not matter. In my mind, there's only one way to overcome thought centers to overcome those outside forces, and that is to get on a path of spiritual perfection. Now, on that path, things are going to open up in yourself, parts of yourself that you didn't realize are there. Like through the path of initiation in the Golden Dawn, and you're faced with different elemental alchemical stages, your weaknesses come out and your strengths come out. And sometimes we don't like to admit parts of our lives that we have weaknesses in. Sometimes we don't like to admit that we are the kind of person that we are. But in continuing to act and move forward to become capable of carrying more energy, working toward the divine, working toward improving our lives, we can overcome those thought forces. Now, one way that I've learned to overcome these thought centers is to communicate about them. Because in talking about what's going on, verbalizing it, it brings that force, that dark-natured force, it brings it into a greater light. And it's bringing it out into the conscious mind and expressing it verbally brings it out into the light and almost instantaneously causes it to dissolve. Because you look at yourself and you see how ridiculous it is, and then that thought force no longer has any power over you to initiate any control of your emotional body or your mind.
Okay. You want to take a shot at that, Fetter, I see?
Yeah, I agree with everything AA is saying. And, in addition to that, last week we talked a little bit about the power of the neophyte initiation and how there was an experience that was had by our order of an individual who was overcome by evil forces that didn't seem to respond to anything. But they did respond to the light. They responded to the light that was invoked through the power of initiation. And this is the one thing that can overcome all darkness, all evil, is the true light. And as Vietrader AA is saying, a path of spiritual attainment, which can take you from the realms of the darkness and into the company of true light, is, I think, one of the most powerful ways to be able to become aware that there are thought senders to begin with, and that these thoughts that sound like your voice, that are constructed by your own vocabulary, are in fact either parts of yourself or coming from something outside of you that is truly seeking to take you out of the light back into the darkness. On a practical note, I think the only thing I would add is the power of self-reflection. The more we engage in the art of what is called metacognition, or having thoughts about our thoughts, or thoughts about our emotions, the more we can, as we learn in the outer order through the elemental initiations, look at our micro prosopos, our sphere of sensation, from the outside in, try to do so more objectively, the more we'll be able to recognize when something enters that sphere that just seems a little off. It seems to be taking us away from what previously was our hopes, our dreams, our aspirations. So I would say, again, on a practical level, other than the power of initiation, the power of spirituality, is just that, to be more attentive to our thoughts, more attentive to our emotions.
The power of initiation is an exorcism, isn't it? I mean, it is not only an exorcism, it is an invocation of light at the same time. So we're not only, that's one of the, I think, the fallacies of a lot of healing procedures, is that they proceed to try to invoke spirit or light or goodness, and that's all great, but they don't take the time to remove the unwanted energy. And I think the Golden Dawn is very, very clear. You remove the unwanted energy, and then you proceed to invoke the light, because now you have a container that can hold the light, that won't crack apart, and so forth. That, if you're in the chat room and you have a question in regards to our topic, go ahead and post it in the chat room. We'll get it on the air for you right away. I think we have Frater TDL from the Temple of Isis. So let's see if he's on there. Is this Frater? Hold on a moment. There we go. Is this Frater TDL? Hello? Well, I guess we don't have Frater TDL on from the Temple of Isis. I know that he was going to attempt to come on, but we'll try one more time. Hello, this is Frater TDL. Well, I guess he's having his own negative problems in trying to get on Skype or use whatever kind of method. Okay, well, let's proceed a little bit further. What about the person who does not have any natural protection? They're not a part of a mystery school. They don't necessarily believe in negative energy, all that kind of stuff. How do they get hammered by negative energy during their life? How does it happen to them? And what can they do to protect themselves? Frater AA, I know that's a tough question. There's a lot to that. You could probably do an entire show on that. But you want to go ahead and take a stab at that and give some real simple things that people can start doing. If you're not a part of the mystery school, you're not doing any kind of spiritual work to help you or aid you, you're just living a normal life and you want to take your life and make certain that you're not being hammered by negative or unwanted forces.
Well, I think it's important to first understand that we ourselves determine our own destinies, and that determination, that direction is often put in motion by the decisions we make in our lives, okay? With that being said, you can make extreme changes in your life simply by standing up and making the decision to make those changes. A lot of us want to make changes in our lives, but we never get past the planning stage because we're always going to start tomorrow. But in general, making positive changes in your life by taking small steps. Set small, achievable goals for yourself. And achieve those goals one at a time. And then as you achieve those small goals, make larger ones. Now, if you're a religious person or a spiritual person, everybody should be familiar with the power of prayer. It's a very powerful force because it impresses upon the conscious and the unconscious mind a direction toward divinity, toward self-improvement, and toward enlightenment. You know,
there's...
No, there's absolutely nothing you can do. Everybody should become initiated into the Golden Dawn. No, I think that, you know, your belief systems is going to play a part on what you allow to become a tool for you. You know, if bad things are happening in your life and they seem to occur outside of the realm of reasonability. That's why I always like to say, you know, perform a check of reasonability before you start ascribing things to outside forces of darkness. Is it reasonable that all this would be happening, anyways, if there were no dark forces? And if it's reasonable, then perhaps, you know, a more mundane solution might be more practical. However, if it just seems that, you know, it's too unreasonable for certain struggles or obstacles to constantly be keeping you from attaining your dreams, your inspirations, your passions, or your spiritual work, then I think what you would have to do in order to accomplish or to overcome these is to accept the objective nature of them to some degree. Now, that doesn't mean that all of them would be outside of you, but understand them as real, and then, take what belief systems you have. As AA is saying, if you have spiritual, religious, meditative beliefs, then I say elevate to the highest aspect of the divine you can. You know, because if you recognize these as evil, for whatever meaning you place upon that, then you must also have a concept in you, innate in your nature, of the light, of the good, of the divine. So whatever it is that connects you to that, that is, I believe, the path that one should take in these matters.
I really like that. I mean, because God does not force good on us, and I don't believe that darkness denies us from attaining a divine state. And I often tell people, you know, if you feel a cold chill come up your spine and the room gets rather cold, the first thing you should do is check the window and make sure, you know, it's not open.
Yeah, I think sometimes people are too quick to jump to some kind of a supernatural conclusion. Okay, what are some tools that people who are beginning magical practice, spiritual practice, should be doing or considering invoking on a regular basis, such as the LBRP and things of this nature? And maybe you can kind of just give a little bit of what you think is kind of the minimal requirement and why you think it's kind of that minimal requirement.
Well, I think the minimal requirement is a fantastic exercise, a combination of exercises known as the fourfold breath and meditation on a point, because it's a practice that gains you control over your physical body and brings you into a state of meditation and contemplation. And the meditation on the point helps to bring you into a centered position. You know, we've talked about these extreme forces, positive light, negative darkness, being in the middle of that, being centered between those forces, where you're not drawn to the extremity of one side or the other, in my mind is the ultimate first step in a very simple exercise, even before beginning such powerful rituals such as the LBRP. What do you think, Icy?
I think the basic tools to begin with are the ones that are given within, you know, the earlier grades of our order initiation: the fourfold breath, centering, coming to a state of quiet, I find to be one of the most effective tools. If it's the case that we're being afflicted by, you know, what we term as thought senders, then if you have the power to stop your thoughts, then what can a thought sender send to you? You know, if you have the power to quiet your emotions, then you don't need to fear the darkness of depression or frustration. So even simple, you know, whether it's a yogic technique or a Western spiritual meditation, something that can quiet the mind and quiet the emotions, quiet the fiery passions, all the internal elements of the microcosm, to come to that centered state of quiet. And from there, make a decision on where to go and how to deal with these forces.
That's a good point. I think that's well said. I'm wondering about something that McGregor Mathers talked about, one of the founders of the Golden Dawn. And I think this is very important. When people begin in the Golden Dawn, I've seen people, for example, go to a store that are into crystals, and they'll buy a beautiful point crystal, and they'll put it in a velvet pouch or a special wood box, and they'll keep it clean. They won't touch it with their fingerprints on it. I remember a gentleman once who bought a pool cue, you know, for shooting billiards. He paid $10,000 for that pool cue, and every time he pulled that pool cue out, he would take a very soft cloth and wipe it up and down the pool cue. And yet when I looked at his magical tools and implements that he had made, they looked like they were made by a kindergartner. They were carried in a bag, in a gin bag, where they were being scratched and pounded together. McGregor Mathers points out that if we do a ritual such as the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram, or the greater banishing ritual of the pentagram, if we do any kind of a banishing ritual to remove unwanted negative forces, and we do it haphazardly, and we do it quickly without thought or foresight or planning, without putting ourselves into it, we run the risk of attracting the opposite force. And so oftentimes I see people that are into the study, they say, well, I just, you know, I bought this book on the Golden Dawn, or I saw a video on YouTube and they were doing it this way. Well, maybe they were doing it wrong, you know? and if they were doing it wrong, you're now doing it wrong. So I certainly wouldn't make that my crowning jewel for where I learned the Golden Dawn tradition from. But there are opposing forces, and Mathers talks about, you know, the importance of keeping our tools pristine, of taking excellent care of them, of valuing these tools in our ritual work the way we would value a diamond or a hunk of gold or something precious. And I think that's very important, because without that kind of reverence for our work in the Golden Dawn and for the tradition and for the mystery tradition in general, I think we automatically invoke the opposite force. We're saying, look, we don't really care about this. This is really not that important. And so I suggest to people, they say, well, what can I do? I'm getting bugged by negative thoughts and all that kind of stuff, and I see how they're living, and I see the value they put on their ritual work. I ask, why are you doing your ritual work regularly? No. You have your tools made? No. Yes, and they're all sloppy and they're dirty. And they come into a temple and they have bare feet. Well, I don't have my slippers with me. That kind of thing. And, of course, they're stopped at the door by the sentinel. They're not allowed in. And they're wondering why things aren't going well in their life. And I point out, you'd be better off quitting the Golden Dawn than doing it in a half-assed manner. Am I wrong?
No, not at all. I agree, and I agree because, you know, I've seen this so many times where people claim that they believe in magic. They claim they believe in the power of their tool. They claim that they believe in the power of an LBRP, yet they, after years and years of practice, they never take it beyond the stage of the simple rubric. You know, to them, the LBRP just is nothing more than the words and the movements of that ritual, or, you know, their fire wand is nothing more than the painted wood stick that has had some names vibrated over it. And the shame of that is that they never come to understand the deeper mystery behind all of this. And if we truly want to have the effect of, say, the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram that truly lies in the power of the words and in the ritual, then we have to connect on a deeper spiritual level that requires our utmost reverence, our utmost respect, and to keep it sacred. In our tradition and in our order, we begin almost every ritual with a purification and a consecration in the tradition of old that says that, you know, all of the substances and ourselves in our temple pure in order to receive the light of the divine, the light of God. And then we consecrate it in the name of the divine. We make it holy. And so we never, those of us in our order who are carrying on this tradition, would never think of beginning a work of magic before making it pure for the divine light and for making it holy and ready for that. And that very act of regarding it with that level of sacredness and reverence allows us, I believe, to open up to their deeper power, and then these tools are that much more effective, and not only effective but are true to what they are designed for.
Well, yes, that's one of the reasons why our temples have to be spotless and clean. They have to be purified, not just spiritually clean. They have to be physically clean as well, you know. And sometimes I see people trying to do their ritual work in a very dirty environment, you know, a dirty robe and all of that kind of stuff. And it just attracts more negativity. And it's the same thing in business. You know, if you don't have the right kind of environment for your business, you're not going to attract the right kind of client. You know, you're attracting the opposing force. So talking about opposing forces, I thought we'd go down the tree of life, because this will give us, you know, everybody gets into this definition of evil. And we decided before the show that we weren't going to tackle that particular question, because everybody said, well, what is evil? Okay, we're not going there with this. But we are going to talk about opposing forces or evil forces on the tree of life. We've only got about 17 minutes left, so we'll have to be quick. We won't be able to do it the justice that we'd like to. But in Keter, we have the crown. This is the divine white brilliant. The opposing force on the negative tree, the adverse tree, there is a tree that is adverse. It's reverse. It's upside down. Is Thamiel, and maybe I shouldn't even mention these names. I don't know. I don't think the names by themselves have power, but that's a matter of debate amongst some Golden Dawn practitioners. But it means twins of God, twins of God. And here, the whole concept of Keter is unity, is everything coming together as one, everything starting from one, everything ending as one, all is one. You know, it's the Shema, hear, O hear, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one. Yet here we have the twins of God, or the two contending forces. How does that happen in our life? Frater AA, I mean, don't we do that sometimes in our life where we're caught up in those two contending forces?
Well, I think we do it all the time, intentionally and unintentionally. And it reminds me of that Kabbalist that Malkuth is in Keter and Keter is in Malkuth. And, Malkuth being kingdom, I would have to say its opposite might refer to instability. And so I think we invoke that opposite power trait by living a life of instability. Does that make sense?
What about when your spiritual life, though, is divided? I mean, that's really where you need to have a sense of unity. I mean, whatever you're doing spiritually with your life, isn't that where unity counts the most?
Sorry, I couldn't hear you. Said the message broke up.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that in our spiritual life, because Keter represents pure spirit, isn't that where unity really counts the most? That's where we can't afford to be divided.
Well, certainly, we have to focus on that oneness and that unity. I think it refers back to something I said earlier, where if everyone were a single chain in a link of chains, if we don't have that unity, if one link in the chain becomes weak, then the whole structure falls down around us. And so if our strength and is not linked to that unity and that divinity, we're going to crumble ourselves, if you will, and that will open you up to all kinds of forms of darkness and instability.
Well, the next emanation from the divine through the tree of life is Chokhmah, and I decided not to give the Klipothic name or from the adverse tree, but you can... I can recommend a couple books. Goodwin's Kabbalistic Encyclopedia would be a good one. The Complete Magician's Table by Stephen Skinner would be another excellent book to own. And they will have all of these definitions in there for you. But Chokhmah, you know, Solomon prayed for one thing. God said, what do you want? He says, I want wisdom. You know, because with wisdom, I can acquire everything else I need. And that's Chokhmah. And here we have this the hinders. And that's what they're called, the hinder. And I think, Frater Ashley, don't you think what they're really trying to hinder you is from using this innate wisdom that you were born with as a reflection of the divine?
Sure, yeah. I mean, in some cases we could see wisdom as the right application of our knowledge and our understanding of all that we have come to understand through our spiritual struggles, and then to apply that in order for the betterment of the whole. And it would seem here we could say that the hinderers is that force, or those which would prevent us from applying that knowledge or that understanding in a right way, in a wise way.
Yes, using wisdom as our backdrop. Well, next we move to Bina, which means understanding. It's where we've taken all of this divine influx from the crown and from the area of wisdom, and we begin to understand how to apply it. But now we have this opposing force, the demonic force on the adverse tree is called the concealers. And I think what they do is they blind us. I mean, we can be standing right in front of the answer to our life, to what we need to do, to what we're called to do, and we don't see it. It's concealed in front of us.
Yeah, we become blind to that true light, to our own reflection, if you will, that truth becomes concealed.
I think that's an absolutely essential area, and that's called the crown, or the supernal triad, I should say. But in the supernal triad, the top three sephirot are absolutely essential for meditating on and invoking as you start to work the Golden Dawn system, because you can't afford to put yourself into that position where you're concealed, where you're blind, where you don't have wisdom, where you're divided, where you don't know which way to go, left or right, up or down. You're dumbfounded. And I think that's what evil tries to put a person in a state of being dumbfounded, especially a person on the magical path, in the higher levels of spiritual development and magical development. Mm-hmm. Well, next we come down to Hesed, and they're called the Smiters. Given other definitions, but that's as good a definition as we're going to get. It's a pretty good definition. And Hesed is the expansion of this divine supernal triad. It's the expansion of it into the lower seven sephirot of the tree, where manifestation is now going to start to begin to take hold in your physical life. But when you have these smiters that are interfering with that area of divine emanation, what are they doing, Frederick? They're cutting it away. Am I right? Are they cutting it before it ever gets a chance to take root?
Yeah, ultimately they're just pounding it down to nothing. I mean, try to open yourself up to something and have it completely wiped and burned away before you have any chance of implementing any mercy or compassion.
Another concept that has said is that of royalty, and if you think of the king of a kingdom, you know, one of his supreme roles is to keep the kingdom united, and not necessarily in the same unity that we see in the divine of Keter, but the unity of all the pieces of the tree below the supernal triad, and that is, you know, to keep all of the people in his kingdom under one rule. And the another definition of these demons I've seen is the breakers in pieces. They smite and they break into pieces, just as, you know, the kingdom crumbles under the false rule of false kingship.
Now, isn't Melchizedek akin to that sphere also? And he would be known as the righteous ruler, and so the smiters would smite away any chance of righteousness and proper guidance.
Sure, and he broke into pieces too, didn't he? Because he didn't have a strong foundation. That's very true. Well, okay, so all of these opposing forces are a part of the adverse tree, and we're not trying to get anybody frightened. We don't invoke these forces in the Golden Dawn. What we do is we learn to overcome evil with good. It says one of our initiations: let the power, let the kings of Edom be banished. And what it means by that is that yes, these forces are there. We're going to use them to propel ourselves forward onto the light. We don't invoke them, but we don't allow them to take advantage of us either. Next we have Geburah, and Geburah is the sephirah of power, okay? I mean, everybody loves Geburah that's a male, right? You always see, I want some Geburah incense. I need Geburah oil. Everybody's wearing red. They love Geburah. It's a sephirah of power, and it's fiery. But what happens when that fire turns evil? Well, one of the definitions, there's a couple, but one of them is called the arsonist. And so now we don't have a fire that is dedicated to building, to removing something so that something else can grow there in its place, to exploding a building, to imploding a building perhaps, so that we can clean it up and build something else there even better. Now, we just have random acts of violence and fire and anger and hatred. How often have we seen people locked up in this level of mentality within
all the time
the spiritual community?
Yeah, all the time. They're fire, their passion gets out of control, and now it becomes a destructive force that would rather set fire to everything around them so that they, as though they are the only ones to remain.
Isn't it interesting, if I might add, that when a person opens themselves up to negative and unwanted forces, sometimes evil forces, I have never, ever seen anybody that has opened themselves up to those kind of energies that wanted to go down alone. They want to send arson fires as often and as quickly as they possibly can. They want to take down as many people with them. It seems to be the nature of that kind of energy. You know, if you're on a spiritual path, you're focused inward on developing your own spiritual nature. But sometimes these people, they get caught up in that negative energy, that unwanted, just filthy energy, for lack of a better term, and they want to hurt everybody around them, even people they love. Next, we have Kaifirit, at the center of the tree. Kaifirit is associated with the sun. It's that glowing light in the center of our heart area. It's oftentimes called beauty, but it can be all that beauty can be destroyed over haggling. And so one of the definitions is the hagglers. Perhaps there's another definition you'd like to share. But it's this haggling over everything rather than growing. The light of the sun is to grow. But when we start haggling, I want more of this, I want less of that, you know, now we're caught up in this whole world of I want, I want, I want, rather than I give, I give, I give. The light of the sun is to give. Kaifirit is about giving. It's beauty. It's giving. But when you're haggling, you're only thinking about what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's very interesting, too, because Kaifirit being that balancing place between Chesed and Geburah, and now you find that place where you're supposed to be in unity and combining those forces and energy, now you're haggling between them. Those two forces of mercy and severity now become such opposites that it becomes a constant battle, where you haggle between each of them in order and never find that place of perfect balance.
Yes. Our next one is Netzach, and that's where we have this passion, and it gets in used properly. Passion gets built up, and then it gets focused in a direction that takes us further into the light. It takes us deeper into the mysteries, into the sacred mysteries. But the ravens of dispersion, or the ravens of death, you know, are the opposing force in Netzach. And so what they're doing is they're picking away at this passion. They're just ripping it apart so that pretty soon that passion's all gone. Well, next we have Hod. And Hod, how would you define Hod? Hod is that place of splendor, but it's the splendor of the intellect. Splendor of the mind connected to the spirit, the mind integrated with spirit. And the opposing force there is called the poison of God. I don't know exactly what the poison of God is or how to define it, but I would certainly know it if I took a sip of it or when it's in my mind. I see it in other people's minds from time to time, you know, when they get lost and they're distraught. And they don't know which way to turn. You see, that's the beauty of initiation. It gives you a direction. It provides you guidance. It provides you a mentor. It provides you ways of protecting yourself and edifying yourself and empowering yourself as you're going deeper into the mysteries and climbing up the tree of life. Brethren, I am sorry. We can't finish the tree. We've only got about a minute left.
Oh, no.
Any final thoughts? Maybe 30 seconds apiece.
Well, I'm not sure that I really have any final thoughts. There's another excellent book on the adverse tree. It's called The Tree of Evil by Gray. It's an older book. It's hard to get a hold of, but it's a pretty good read, and it goes along with a lot of what you've talked about here, and it expands quite a bit.
How about you, Fredder? I see. Thank you for joining us. Your final thoughts?
Yeah, I think my ultimate thought would be, you know, it's really hard to do justice to this topic within an hour class or an hour show, but certainly even within several grades of the Outer Order. But I would suggest anybody who truly wants to overcome the darkness and come into the light to seriously consider initiation into the spiritual path.
Well, thank you both for being our guest on the Golden Dawn podcast. We'll be back next week. This is your host, Robert Zenk, reminding you, if you're interested in a path of light, the pathway of initiation, visit www.esotericgoldendawn.com.